Punjabi pioneers, burly Sikhs in brown pujaris and white breeches, and as the Abs came surging up the slope to their position, letting fly their spears, they were met by two shattering volleys. And then the Sikhs were charging them with the bayonet against Abs' spears and swords, smashing into their ranks like a steel fist, outnumbered but forcing the robed tribesmen back and standing by Theodore on Falla. I had to clamp my jaws tight to stop myself yelling, for I remembered their fathers and uncles at Sobraon, you see, and within I was crying, Khalsaji! Sat Sri Akal! There's no hand-to-hand fighter in the world better than a Sikh with his bayonet fixed. They scattered the spearmen like chaff and charged on, and I saw the fancy red pujaris of the 10th Native Infantry among them as they pitchforked the enemy into the gullies. Those same ravines that I'd marked on Fasil's table as a death trap if we'd blundered into them. There were more Abs trying to outflank the baggage convoy, but the Sikhs and native infantry shot them down among the rocks, and the few King's Own who acted as baggage guards stood off those who got within striking distance. But this part of the action was too far for me to see, and events on Falla were claiming my attention. Theodore's half-dozen cannon had been belching away to no good purpose, partly because his Ab gunners were incompetent, partly because the German loaders, I suspect, were making sure that the charges were all wrong. Why chain shot was being used, I couldn't figure, because it's a naval missile. But that's Theodore's army for you. Lions for bravery, but bloody eccentric. But even if his gunners had been Royal Artillery, they'd have had the deuce of a job, for firing dropping shot from a height is a damn fine art. So is building, loading, and firing mortars. Theodore's pet toy, Sevastopol, may have been the biggest piece of ordnance in the history of warfare, for all I know, but the German artisans who cast it, never having made a gun before, botched it, either accidental or a purpose, for at its first discharge it blew up with an explosion you could have heard in Pune. I suspect it was deliberate mischief, from the fact that there wasn't a squarehead in sight when it was fired, and only the Ab gunners felt the full force of the blast, which killed three or four and wounded as many more. It nearly did for Theodore himself, but fortunately for him, there was an unwitting guardian angel on hand to save him. I see it plain, even today. The gunners climbing on the mortar housing, the rabble of attendants and staff watching from a respectful distance, the gunners at the other pieces holding their fire, the rain squalls sweeping across the muddy plateau, Theodore on his mule with his umbrella at the high port. And I had just turned to take a towel from a servant to wipe the water streaming down my face when a tremendous rushing thunder seemed to burst out of the ground itself. The very earth shook, and bodies, debris, and gallons of mud were flying everywhere. I wasn't 5 yards away, but by one of those freaks for which there's no accounting, the blast passed me by. I didn't even stagger, and was thus in a position to move nimbly as 70 tons of solid iron, jarred loose from its housing by that colossal explosion, toppled ponderously in my direction. Which was capital luck for his Abyssinian Majesty, thrown by his startled mule and landing slap in my path as I dive for safety. Ask any man who's been hit foursquare by a fleeing flashy, 14 stone of terrified bone and muscle, and he'll agree that it's a moving experience. Theodore went flying, brolly and all, and I landed on top of him while the enormous mortar, belching smoke, rocked to a standstill on the very spot where he'd been trying to keep his balance. His words, as we scrambled mud-soaked to our feet, were most interesting.
"You save me!"
he yelled, and then added,
"Why?"
Some questions are impossible to answer. "I beg your pardon, I didn't mean to," would have been true, but inappropriate. But I suppose I made some sort of noise, for he stared at me, looking pretty wild, and then turned to the ruin of his mortar, gave a strange wail, and clasped his head in his hands, and sank to his knees in the puddles. Unlike mine, his emotions were not shuddering terror at our escape, nor was he overwhelmed by gratitude. I suppose the fact was that Sevastopol had cost him a deal of labour, dragging it half across Ethiopia, and here he was literally hoist with his own petard. And serve the selfish bastard right. His grief for his useless lump of iron was quickly cut short as a Congreve rushed past overhead, and another absolutely struck one of the cannon, spraying fire and shrapnel everywhere and mortally wounding the AB gun captain. The naval gunners had found our range, and several more rockets hissed above us, weaving crazily, for they were no more